originally when I started, I was introduced as the, you know, only woman in this role. And I think at the time, all of four pro sports, and people would clap and I'd think, gosh, we should not be cheering for this.
Dave Bulger here, and welcome to Had I Known, a show that explores the journeys of some of the most interesting members of the Hamilton College community. This week's guest is Gillian Zucker, class of 1990. All right. Hello once again. First off the bat, I want to thank those of you who have been reaching out with comments and feedback. As I've said before, I always love to hear from the listeners, and the last few weeks I've gotten quite a lot of messages and emails. I heard from classmate Tony Murphy, who's been binging some of the old episodes, and the conversation I had with Bev Lowe sparked a lot of memories for him, one of which apparently involved a farm animal. No animals were harmed in the course of the story. But it's certainly a story I think I need to get a little more details on. But please keep the feedback coming. Keep the comments coming. Had I Known Show across social media, and hadiknownshow@gmail.com if you want to drop an email. Got a fun one this week. The last few weeks, you may have heard me talk about a live event that I was doing with the school. Essentially, it was a live recording of an episode of the show for an audience. And that was with Gillian Zucker, class of 1990. And if you didn't get a chance to join us for that live event, you're in luck, because we're going to play it today as an episode of the podcast. Now, I want to point out that those that attended the live virtual event were given an opportunity to make a $10 donation, a Hamilton, get it, as part of attending the event. As you listen to this, and if you like what you're hearing, go to hamilton.edu/makeagift to donate your Hamilton for the event you missed. Now, I never ask for money for this show. You can certainly send me money if you'd like. I'll take it. But for something like this, which was part of an event, I want to make sure we're not mooching off the school's events here with this episode. So go to hamilton.edu/makeagift. If you like what you hear, make a donation to the school on behalf of the show, on behalf of Gillian Zucker here. There's also a link in the show notes. If you can't remember the URL, just go on, click, send some money, will you? All right, Gillian Zucker. I say this at the beginning of the episode here, but early on when I started jotting down a list of guests I'd like to have on this show, Gillian was high on the list and was circled early on. She is the president of business operations for the Los Angeles Clippers. How cool is that? She is one of the highest ranking female executives in all of professional sports. And if you are interested at all in how to pursue such a career, Gillian is chock full of information and advice for those who are looking to follow in her footsteps. Now, we recorded this back in the first round of the NBA playoffs, at a time when the Clippers were down 2-0 to the Dallas Mavericks. Well, they went on to win that series in 7 games, took on the Utah Jazz, fell down 0-2 to the Jazz, won 4 straight, won that one, and now they're getting ready to kick off their first ever Western Conference Finals. So it's been a heck of a run for Gillian and her Clippers. And it's quite a career journey for Gillian. So have a listen. Hope you enjoy my conversation with Gillian Zucker, class of 1990. Thank you to the entire Hamilton team for hosting this event. And thank you, Gillian, for agreeing to do it. When I started this podcast, the intent was to talk to, as I say on the show, the most interesting members of the Hamilton community. And I'd say I started to scour the list of members of the community who I wanted to talk to. Your name was circled and highlighted very early on in the process, so I'm delighted to be able to get to talk to you today, especially
during a very important time for the Clippers. So thank you for taking time out of your schedule during the postseason. It's much appreciated.
Yeah, I'm hoping there's really good mojo on this call and you're going to try.
A lot of basketball left. A lot of basketball left. A lot of basketball. You got four games. You got to win four. So
we're counting on that.
All right. Good. One of the things we wanted to get into in this conversation, Gillian, is your path from Hamilton College to your successful, incredibly successful career in professional sports. So let's start at Hamilton. And can you talk a little bit about how you ended up at Hamilton?
Yeah, actually, my dad is a graduate of Hamilton College. So, you know, as any teenager is inclined to do when your father has done something, it repulses you. And so the very idea of going to Hamilton was something that I was never going to pursue. But I did agree that I would apply. And after being admitted, he cajoled me into going and spending an overnight and just getting the experience and seeing what Hamilton was like. And the minute I got there, I just knew that it was going to be the right place for me, and a place where I thought I could grow and learn, and it would be in an environment that would, you know, really help to make me successful. So much to my chagrin, as I came home, I had to admit once again that he was right, and I'm very, very thankful that it worked out that way.
What was it that ultimately changed your mind? You could see yourself there. What was it that made you fall in love?
You know, it was multiple things, but the biggest part of it was the people. The people who are at Hamilton are just, they're very confident. I felt like it was a group of people who, you know, didn't necessarily always agree with each other, but everybody was very well spoken. It was a respectful environment. The classes, they seemed fun. People were engaged. It was small enough that everybody kind of knew one another. It was friendly. People were waving. I mean, it was just a very different experience than visiting several of the other schools that I was looking at that point in time. And I just felt like I felt comfortable. It felt like home.
And talk about your experience as a student there. You mentioned before we got started, it's a place where you can try different things. And that's a theme that comes up in my conversations a lot. What were the things that you got yourself involved in as a student there?
Well, many things. I mean, I think that's one of the wonderful things about Hamilton is that it gives you so much opportunity to try things that you've never done before, to see if you might be good at it, and to put you in an environment where it's okay to fail. And it's, you know, okay to succeed, kind of both. And the people who are around you are going to do everything that they can to help you succeed, but also support you if, you know, it's just something that you're not going to excel in. And there were so many things I tried when I was there. I remember freshman year. And I know my freshman roommate, Susie's on the line, so she'll remember this as well. But because I have a German last name, my advisor talked me into taking German. And I was saying, I'm not that great at languages. I don't know if this is the right thing for me, but he was just insistent that I'll be great at it because I have this German last name. Well, I was terrible at German. It was just a complete disaster. But I think the experience of trying something and really investing yourself in it and then figuring out, hey, this isn't the right thing for me. Let me find something else. That's a positive too.
And one of the other things that your first year roommate, Susie, just shared before we got started was that you had come to Hamilton having not played organized sports, which is surprising to hear for someone in a successful career in professional sports. Was there a love of sports early on? Is that where the career you thought your career was going to take you?
Yeah, I've always loved sports. In fact, I was a cheerleader in high school, and my dad likes to say that's still my job today. And in a lot of ways, it kind of is, you know, that leading and managing large teams is really about pulling the best out in them and helping people to, you know, feel an energy where they think they can do something that might feel impossible. So, you know, for me, you know, going to Hamilton gave me an opportunity to really check out a sport, lacrosse, that I didn't know anything about. I didn't know the rules. I'd never, you know, picked up a stick before. But it was an environment in which you could do that.
What prompted you to go out for a sport you knew nothing about? That's interesting.
I just wanted to be part of a team. Actually Susie, you know, who did play team sports and is a terrific field hockey player, you know, kind of watching what that experience was like and the camaraderie of being part of a team was exciting to me. I just also have always loved being a spectator at sports. I think during my time at Hamilton, I never missed a college basketball game the entire time that I was there, with the exception of my junior year abroad. And I think I went to most of those games with Suzanne Smore, who's on the call too.
And then, so a love of sports, is that what you thought you would go career-wise? What was the plan?
No, you know, I actually had no idea that you could have a career in sports. It just didn't even occur to me until my senior year, where, you know, and I think this is another one of the unique things about Hamilton, is some of the requirements that the school has are unusual: swimming 4 lanes of the pool, proficiency in 3 lifetime sports, but also taking this career counseling class that I took the very start of my senior year. And in the process of doing that, what sort of popped up was that perhaps being a sports journalist would be a career path that might be good for me. And so I was encouraged to spend a day with someone who had that career to see what it might be like. And he happened to be covering minor league hockey game in Utica. So, you know, then to go there and have that experience of seeing that there are actually people who for a living run sports franchises, and then having an opportunity to with the Utica Devils my senior year really gave me insight into what that might be like. And it was at that time that, you know, I decided, wow, if I could do this for a living, I would never work a day in my life. This would always feel like a joy. And that's pretty close to the truth. Mm.
So it's funny you say that. I have a very similar experience as a student wanting to get into sports media and interviewing for a job at what was then the Utica Blizzard. And it was given an opportunity to work basically in all at facets of the press box. And then when they explained, well, you come several hours before the game and then you'll be here for many hours after the game. And then it was like, oh, it's not just I get to show up for the game and enjoy it and then go home. Oh, it's actually a job. There's that flip side of it as well, of the work that goes into that people don't realize as a fan what goes into keeping a professional sports team going.
You're so right. And I won't pretend that it's easy. It's not. And it's so competitive too. There are so many people who want to be a part of pro sports franchises. So you do have to outwork everyone around you. But if you find that work to be fun, that's what makes it special.
So what kind of competitiveness did you meet when you started to get into it? So you've worked either in motorsports, and you've worked with or for just about every professional league there is. How did you find your way through that and kind of elbow your way through?
Well, Hamilton got me started. When I graduated, I actually went through the registrar and found Neil Pilson, who was the president of CBS Sports at the time. And I reached out to him and said, I'm a Hamilton alum recent and looking for my first job. And do you have any advice for me? Could I come in and spend 15 minutes with you? And then I got a call back from his assistant, who asked me for a fax number, which I didn't have a fax number, but I gave him my dad's office fax number. And he sent me back this hand scribbled note, which essentially said that he was in the middle of these intense NFL negotiations, but here's 5 names. Feel free to call them and use my name when you do. And that opened doors for me. So that was actually how I landed my first job. And I think that that's kind of the magic of Hamilton. You know, there is such an incredible network, and it's lifelong. I mean, to this day, my best friends are my friends from Hamilton.
And there's something, no matter where you are in the country, if you see someone walk by with a Hamilton hat or a shirt on, there's an instant connection. Or even just my kids get tired of it. We're on the road and, hey, Hamilton sticker on the car. It's just there's an instant connection for sure.
Well, Dani Fagan is on this call right now, and she is a fantastic employee of the LA Clippers. And I can tell you for sure that when her resume came through and it said Hamilton College on it, she was definitely getting an interview.
And rocking the colors too, as well. Right. I like it.
Hat on.
I like it. And then, so talk a little bit about some of your experiences that led you up to working for the Clippers. I know big experience in motorsports, but a path through sports all along.
Yeah, I mean, you know, remembering when I first started in this industry, it wasn't as if there were programs in sports management, or it was widely known that there were careers available in sports or in sports marketing. And so I was really, you know, paving a path for myself, because there wasn't a traditional path to get there. And then doing so at that period of time when you're, you know, a 5'2" female. So for me, it was a circuitous route. I started the PR route because I had a writing major from Hamilton, and you know, it was an easier way to get in through communications. But you know, quickly learned that really the path to the most senior levels in sports are all through revenue. You have to be able to drive revenue. And if you can do that, then you know, there's really a lot of opportunity. So I just sort of took chances on myself. I took a non-traditional route, but every single time there was an opportunity for me to learn something new. And ultimately it gave me kind of a pretty broad base to be able to run a franchise. You know, I had experience in virtually every area of a sports organization by the time I actually had the chance to run one.
As someone who works in professional sports and his primary job is to spend money, I agree with you wholeheartedly. It's a lot easier when you're making money than when you're spending money. You mentioned being a 5'2 female. What kind of challenges as a female in professional sports have you faced? It's not easy for anyone to grow in this career. And I know that in, you know, primarily in sports, it's a boys club. How have you managed to break through that?
You know, it can be, but you know, I like to think that being unique has opened as many doors as maybe it's closed. I'm not so naive as to think that, you know, that I've sailed through this and there haven't been challenges along the way. But you know, you are a little bit of a curiosity when you're the only female in a room, and people do wonder, why are you there, and you know, what must you have to offer that you're in a seat at the table. And as a result of that, you know, you get opportunities that maybe wouldn't come along if you were, you know, just sort of a homogenous group. So that's the way I look at it. I mean, I'm a crazy eternal optimist. I always look at the bright side of everything. So that's the path that I've chosen as I've navigated my way through this crazy industry. I mean, the bottom line is these jobs are rare. There's very few of them. There's 30 people in the job that I have now. That's 30 people. So I don't care who you are, male, female, you know, what ethnicity you are, you know, it's very, very competitive and difficult to get them and to keep them. And you have to perform at the highest level.
Do you sense that the word you use, oddity, do you sense that that's changing, that it's not so much of an oddity anymore?
I like to think so. Certainly this past year has been pretty great. You know, there have been a whole bunch of women hired for the top roles at sports franchises. I think, you know, most recently the Chicago MLS franchise, and before that the DC MLS franchise, and before that the Chicago Blackhawks. So you are seeing it in a variety of different places. There was just another woman who was named president of business operations in the NBA in Houston. Fantastic. You know, so yeah, it would be great. And I always say that, you know, when I started, I was introduced as the, you know, only woman in this role. And I think at the time, all of four pro sports, and people would clap, and I think, gosh, we should not be cheering for this. You know, I remember when I was 25 years old, and I became one of five female general managers in minor league baseball. You know, there's almost 400 teams in minor league baseball. So that was kind of crazy to think. And then, you know, just a couple of years ago, I noticed that a woman was named as a general manager of a AAA team. And I opened up the article and it said that she's one of five women who are in that role. And I thought, gosh, you know, when is this really going to change to a point where, you know, there are more women who are in these roles? And I think that time is now.
Yeah. Well, and you've led the way and you continue to bring in more and more talent and all. But then that's also, you know, if it was competitive before, it's going to be immensely more competitive with more qualified candidates in the mix. And your point about fighting your way through improving how talented you are in getting certain jobs, as I've read about you and your move to the Clippers, convincing Steve Ballmer that you were right for the job was part of getting the job. Can you talk a little bit about that experience?
Yeah, I mean, it was sort of an absolutely crazy experience. And I'll start with network, because were it not for the network that I had assembled over a period of many, many years, I wouldn't be sitting here today, that's for sure. So I didn't do this alone. And I still don't do it alone. And I think that is a big part of, you know, something that I learned at Hamilton is, you know, your network does matter a lot. But I was driving home from work. I was running at the time the Auto Club Speedway NASCAR track in Fontana, California, and I heard on the radio that Steve Ballmer was buying the Clippers, and I thought, God, that's my job. That is what I have been working for my whole career. The idea of taking what I think was, you know, the most tarnished brand in all of sports and transforming it into something that's admired. And it was
because this was when they were coming out of quite a lot of controversy
right after the Sterling Donald Sterling was forced to sell the team. Right. And so I just thought that's it, that's the opportunity. And working for a very, very unique owner in Steve Ballmer, smart, accomplished, self-made, and is buying the team for all the right reasons, not because he wants notoriety, not because he's looking at it as an investment, but because he's a true fan of the game. So for all of those reasons, I thought this is the greatest job that will come along in my career trajectory, and I've got to get it. And I remember coming home and sitting down at the table and saying, I'm going to be the president of the Clippers. And my husband saying, I bet you are. How can I help? And that kind of, I think, energy and having those kind of people around you who believe in you kind of more than you believe in yourself really helps a ton. So along the way, there were a million times where I was like, wow, this is not going to happen for me. I would hear people he was interviewing. I would think, oh, that person has better pedigree than I do. They have better experience than I do. The constant doubting that I think everybody has in their life. But the process continued and I really, really felt like I was on the verge of either being arrested for stalking or getting the job. Like one of the two was going to happen. But my goal was I just need to meet him, because if I could meet him, I'm absolutely certain that I could convince him I'm the right person for the role. And so that's what I asked everybody to do. And literally anybody who I thought might cross his path, regardless of, sort of what their role was or how they might interact with him, was to just tell him he needs to meet me. And ultimately, that's exactly what happened. We had the opportunity to meet, and that conversation continued over a course of many weeks. And in the late fall of 2014, I took over the Clippers job.
That's incredible. The power of the network, leveraging the network. That's so awesome. So then, can you talk about what the job actually is for those that don't understand? What is your core function?
Yeah, I mean, I oversee all of the elements of the operation of the business. Now, that excludes basketball. I don't, write the plays. I don't decide how many minutes somebody gets. I don't determine who's on our roster. But I do support in any way that whole organization so that they can focus on the things that are most important, which is winning basketball games. And that's pretty much how we think about the whole operation. You know, the idea that my job is to make sure that that building is full to the rafters every single night and as loud as it can possibly be. So that's everything from music to lighting to game presentation to contests to crowd engagement to selling the tickets to how sponsors are integrated to selling the sponsorship. So all of those things are part of this environment that we create to hopefully give that team just a teeny bit of a competitive advantage to just get one extra point or win one more game.
And given where things were last year, pandemic and so forth, and where things have been progressing this year, a lot of those things you talked about were not easy, I imagine. What kind of challenges have you been facing in the job this year?
I mean, this year has been, I think for everyone, just, devastatingly difficult. Yeah. I think for a lot of people, it's been lonely. I think that for a lot of people, it's been scary. And, it's all been amplified by the conversations that are going on around. And I think that maybe we'll look back at this moment in time and think that it's probably one of the most pivotal, most important years that hopefully we ever had, that this creates actual sustainable change in our world. So in many ways, I'm hopeful. Like I said before, I'm the eternal optimist and I think of it that way. But there's been nothing about this year that hasn't been a struggle. And, certainly it has been very difficult from the financial wherewithal of what a P&L looks like for an NBA basketball team. But, that's sort of champagne problems compared with some of the things I think that the world's faced this year.
And then one of those things certainly was the social justice movement that continues. the NBA and certainly the Clippers have been out in front of a lot of this and leading the conversation. As someone who's, as you just said, plays a significant role in marketing and communications and how the team is presented to the community, can you talk a little bit about what you've been doing and your team's been doing in supporting the players in this movement?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's really three key places. So number one is we have a platform. You know, just by nature of being a global brand, that you have a platform where you can influence, and we're utilizing it, you know, to be able to communicate messages that we think are important to the world. So I think that's first, you know. Number two, I would say, you know, we're an employer, we hire a lot of people, and we can be very prescriptive in the way that we think about who we hire and the diversity of our organization, and being really, really focused on how important it is to bring in people who are from a variety of different backgrounds, who are from different ethnicities, different genders, and also different upbringings. You know, it's not just geographically from different places because you bring different perspective, but also, you know, what socioeconomic environment you grew up in, and what the makeup of your or composition of your family environment was. All of those things give different perspectives, and those are all fans that are represented in our grandstand. So if we're able to have them represented in our organization, we can do a better job, you know, at establishing our brand. And I would say the third thing is community. You know, if you look at the community relations work that we do, it's really one that mirrors off of the way that our owner and his wife think about philanthropy. And when he left Microsoft, you know, this was something that he thought about was, okay, I've been very fortunate. What do I do with all of this? And rather than say, let me write a check here, he thought, let me take my mind share and put it against solving really, really difficult problems. And as a result of that, I think, you know, the things that they have determined they're going to focus on, which is this idea that the American dream is not possible for all youth, is a pretty powerful problem to tackle. So if you think about, if you are born a certain race in a certain place, that you don't have the same opportunity as somebody else, and how do you fix that? And that's really where the Clippers intersect with that question, which is, what can we do to help solve some of those problems? And we have a lot of resources to be able to do it. In fact, we're just about ready to complete the last of about a 2-year project where we have renovated every single basketball court, indoor and out, in all of Los Angeles. Wow. And the thing about that project is, you don't even realize how many people that touches until you start going to a rec center that's been so run down that people couldn't play basketball in it, and go in there and see not only are people playing basketball, but they're playing volleyball. They're having dance classes. You have seniors who are doing folk dancing or square dancing, and the usage and of those facilities and the way that they bring in communities and they help with, you know, keeping people mobile and solving some of the childhood obesity issues that we're facing. Like the tentacles of a project like that are so wide reaching. I think even when we started it, we didn't realize how dramatic they were.
And the lifelong fans you're creating along the way certainly helps.
That to me is, you know, the cherry on top, right?
Right.
That, you know, when we're out there doing these things, there is truly a very meaningful altruistic reason behind all of them. It's not like we look at it and say, oh, this is about brand building, because there, you know, we have two NBA teams in this market, and there are certainly fans of the other teams that we still invite to become part of whatever it is we're doing in the community. We did another program around glasses. After learning that a lot of the issues that children are being identified for as having either learning differences or having behavioral problems can be solved just by giving them a pair of glasses, they don't realize they have undiagnosed vision issues. And so we decided to try to tackle that problem. And last year completed testing all of Los Angeles Unified School District, 600,000 kids for undiagnosed vision issues, and then having that supported by insurance on an ongoing basis. So essentially, you know, correcting the vision issue for kids in Los Angeles long term. You know, that those are big, important things that are not about somebody who will necessarily buy a ticket, but it's somebody who can make a real difference in their community.
It's fantastic. Well, I know one of the things that just about every organization in sports deals with is the changing media landscape, which has just been amplified by what's been going on during the pandemic. And that presents different challenges for fan engagement, which requires a lot of innovation. I know that one of the key driver of you, of yours and your team is innovation. Can you talk a little bit about some of the innovative things you're doing with fan engagement?
Yeah, I think we're really excited about what's going on in the world of broadcast. I mean, I think in some ways the cord cutting and the cord nevers was very scary, and there's been kind of this transition, but it was certainly accelerated by COVID. And I don't think, I mean, there's very few people out there that don't have a Netflix account or Disney Plus. People understand what Hulu is and how it works. And so I think that, you know, all of that is very positive for sort of the future of sports broadcast rights. And it's something that we're really enjoying learning about and testing. So actually, shortly after I started with the Clippers, we identified a startup company in Little Tokyo in Los Angeles called Second Spectrum. And they had some pretty interesting ideas about how to use artificial intelligence and computer vision to create graphic overlays that could be inserted over video. Now, you know, that's something that people are used to. You see it a lot on replays, or you see it, you know, when people are doing highlights at halftime, you know, but that's all done manually. And so the idea that this could be done in real time live by computer was pretty crazy. And it's just been in the last few weeks that we've been able to get the delay time down under a second. So we think that we're going to be able to have a product where you can actually broadcast games live and have those overlays placed over the top of it so people can experience games in different ways. And when you can do that, you can put almost any graphic on there you want. So if a guy's hot, you can, you know, actually make graphics that make him look like he's on fire. Or if there's a, you know, a dunk, you can have a bunch of donuts come out of the net. But at the same time, you know, if you're just interested in statistics, you can use it in that way. And given the direction and trajectory of the world, it'll be something that would be interesting to see if it can be applied to gaming or gambling.
Very cool. Very cool. And then another element of fan engagement certainly is the in-person, in-game experience as a fan. And you all are building a new home. Going to be neighbors of our NFL franchise in Inglewood. Talk a little bit about what that venue is going to be like.
Very, very exciting project. We're looking to break ground later this year. And we're just winding up the construction drawing. So we've got a pretty good idea of what the place is going to look like. And it is spectacular. but I mean that not just from the point of view of how it looks, but the point of view of how it works. And this idea that, you know, all of these facilities have a point of view. And the point of view of this place is, you know, that we want to win. And by that, I mean that we want to win in every metric that you could possibly judge. But we also want anybody who walks into the place to feel like, well, this place was built for me. It was built for the seat that I'm sitting in. So if you saved all year to sit in the last seat in the last row, then you are going to feel like that place was built for you. There are special things that you get that you wouldn't get anyplace else. And the same if, you know, you're a corporation and you're entertaining, and the same if you're an athlete either playing for us or playing for the opposing team. So I think having that point of view on a facility is something that, you know, hopefully can set us apart. And we're very much looking forward to unveiling it later this summer.
That's exciting. Good luck with that. And, you know, who wants to park in downtown L.A. at the Staples Center? You want to get out and, you know, it's easy to get down to Inglewood, of course.
Right now,
you know,
I hope a lot of people want to park in downtown L.A.
In the future. So you mentioned the competitiveness of getting into professional sports, and there are a lot of recent alums and I think some current students that had registered for this. What advice would you give to Hamilton students or any alum, really, that would be looking to get into a career in sports?
Well, I mean, I think first of all, like, come ready to work hard. It is a place where you work and the place where other people play. But if you love the work, there's really nothing better. But these jobs are hard. They require intense determination and they're competitive. So they require a competitive spirit. You got to come wanting to win. And I think that's no matter what the job is, whether, you know, you're in a finance role in an organization or recruiting role in an organization or you're in my job. So, you know, that's one thing. I mean, number two is it's a small industry like anything else. And I think, you know, this is something that, as I said, I mean, I learned this at Hamilton, but I think I've carried it with me everywhere, is that, you know, when you have a network that's, you know, not as large as, you know, some of the broader ones, you can't hide, right? Everybody knows everybody. And there's a lot of positives to that. But if you can remember it along the way, because people change, people grow, you know, there isn't anybody who doesn't have, oh, I wish I'd handled this differently in my life. You know, nobody doesn't have moments like that. But, you know, to make sure that you treat people well around you, that, you know, you handle things with grace and, you know, bring a humility to what you do, because there are 10 other people you know, who want that job and probably will bring as much energy and excitement as you will. And really understanding that all the time, no matter how much success you have, is I think what keeps you successful in these roles.
My first taste of working in professional sports was at an ad agency, and we had a league as a client, not mine, not my league or your league. You figure out which one we're talking about. And as we were negotiating our contract, the feedback we got was, you realize there are 10 agencies that will do this for free. So, and I think that mindset, to your point, there are 10 other people who want that job as well. It creates a different level of competitiveness for sure. And you got to come ready to play. So I asked this question of everyone I talked to in these conversations. Do you think back to you going back to your dad with your tail between your legs and telling him he was right as you started your Hamilton career, and thinking about your entire career now, is there anything you wish you had known?
Oh gosh, there are so many things I wish I had known. I wish I had known how important taking accounting was. That for me is number one. I can remember my first job really running a franchise. Again, I said I was about 25 years old, running a minor league baseball franchise. And the CFO was me. So in addition to being the head of HR and the head of sponsorships and the head of ticket sales and the head of operations, you're also responsible for not just, you know, managing the P&L, but actually paying all the bills and understanding taxes and, you know, payroll and all of those things. And it was, I got thrown in the deep end, that's for darn sure. So it ended up being an MBA in real time. But I was thinking back to the fact that at one point I was proud that I didn't take a math class at Hamilton, and I was like, not so good.
All right, that's Gillian Zucker, class of 1990, president of business operations for the Los Angeles Clippers. Now, there was a Q&A with the audience following that conversation. And if you're wondering why it's not included, well, you didn't go to the event, so you don't get to hear that. That's saved for people who actually attended. My thanks to Gillian for being a part of that event. It was a lot of fun, and I was thrilled to get a chance to chat with her and hear about her story, which was a great one. And good luck to Gillian and the Clippers the rest of the way. They take on the Phoenix Suns in the Western Conference Finals. Hope they keep it up. And a reminder, if you like what you hear in today's episode, go ahead and go to hamilton.edu/makeagift to donate $10, a Hamilton, to the school. You have been listening to Had I Known on WHCL-FM, Clinton, New York. HadIKnown.buzzsprout.com. Had I Known show on social media. As always, my thanks to Dr. Michael Woods for supplying the music on the show. And once again, Doc is going to play us out. Hope you enjoyed the show. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you.
podcast show on your radio or take it to go.